Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the pantograph of Friday, August 7th, 2026. We turn first to page one, where the main story is the cutting board column, this week headlined, Farmer Stays Down to Earth, Middle Creek Farms Raising Livestock via Silvopastures. The chickens at Middle Creek Farms eat bugs. They're supposed to, right? At least that's what Frank Paslaski said when he invited Clay Jackson and me to his Clinton farm last month. See the bugs, he asked that Tuesday, July 21st, as we strolled near three of his chicken runs. There's grasshoppers and everything else, and chickens get to be chickens. We could, by the ethical way of doing things, we could go up to 30 birds in one of these. We choose to go 25. There's no reason to crowd them. We have the room. The chickens, between 700 to 900 each season, are moved every day, Paslaski said, because, you know, more bugs. We finish our birds off at 8 weeks, he said. Most people do seven. The reason I don't do it or we don't do it is because, yeah, we won't make as much money because of feeding them for another week, but I'm not intending for my customers to pay for bone. There's meat on them, and I think I get a better quality bird. And chickens are just one of the birds calling Middle Creek's 52 acres home. Turkeys, ducks, geese, and guinea fowl, along with wild owls and hawks, share the wooded farm with pigs, goats, and one horse named Charlie. A windmill powers the aerator for the pond that regularly houses catfish as big as your arm, Paslaski said. And there are five dogs. So strap on your boots and join me, because this week we're on the farm at Middle Creek Farms, neighbor to Weldon Springs State Park. Middle Creek comprises several silvopastures, which, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, is the deliberate integration of trees and grazing livestock operations on the same land. These systems are intensively managed for both forest products and forage, providing both short and long-term income sources. The goats, pigs, and chickens are all taken to local Central Illinois businesses for processing before being sold at the downtown Bloomington Farmers Market. However, Paslaski and his wife Janie took an indirect route to such an extensive brand of husbandry. Paslaski retired from the Clinton Power Station in the latter half of 2022, and we started really getting into the farm and doing the silvopasturing, reclaiming the land, doing some regenerative grazing, getting the animals in places, and eating our own food, he said. The pair grew up in Kenosha, Wisconsin, before marrying and having some children, all adults now. He worked his way up in nuclear power, first as a janitor and then training to get every certification he could, and eventually becoming department head, Paslaski said. He took the job in Clinton in the 2010s, but 5 years ago, his doctor gave him a pretty stark warning. It was the end of 2021. I went into the doctor's and my A1C was 12.9%, Paslaski said. A1C is the measure of a person's blood sugar percentage over the past 2 to 3 months, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and a normal score is below 5.7%. And Paslaski was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I was 326 pounds, he said. Doctor told me pretty much, he said, the stress that you're under is going to kill you. So we had to make a choice. So I turned 55 in 2022, and I retired in September of 2022, and long story short, started watching my diabetes, and my A1C kept going down and down and down. And since then, Paslaski has lost 90 pounds. His last A1C check was 5.7%. And the significance of that progress is not lost on him. My doctor said, back when I got diagnosed and where I'm at now, he said if I kept going down the path of living the corporate life, I wouldn't be here right now, he said. So I get up in the morning and I do what I do because I love the animals. I love the land and I love my wife and working hard, he added. If I get one more day and take care of myself, it's been worth it for me. Most animals on their farm don't have names, Peslaski said, because, well, their lot in life doesn't necessarily require one. Others are named mostly after TV characters. There's the turkey named after the Flintstones, like Barney, Fred, and Betty, the latter two having sadly died. One pig is named Sassy Pants, while two of the sows are Velma and Daphne from Scooby-Doo. Janie has Sam and Dean from Supernatural, goats, Peslaski said. They let customers at the market choose the name of some baby goats this season, he said, and they chose another Supernatural character, Crowley. If you have a name on our farm, you're okay, he said. And then there's Squiggy, their boar stud. Squiggy is the Hulk who sires all the pigs on the farm, Peslaski said, and he is massive, standing above waist level against Peslaski's 6'3" frame. And the pigs all get to roam and rummage about on the various Silva pastures, Peslaski said, digging up roots and eating fallen tree nuts, all while plowing the land. Because we have a Duroc Berkshire cross, we use them for like plowing up the ground and picking things up, he said. They're looking to bring in a pig breed called Idaho Pasture, Peslaski said, which are just supposed to eat like pasture, so they're not very invasive, so they kind of establish the ground a little bit better. Once a particular pasture has been hog plowed, they do a controlled burn to kill off the smaller vegetation and overseed with varieties like clover and orchard grass, Peslaski said. That attracts the bugs, and those supplement the chickens' diets. All this happens on a great big U-shaped fenced-in area, Peslaski said, rotating the pigs and meat chickens. Their egg-laying chickens roost in the greenhouse, but have essentially free movements about the property. And their goats have their own part of the farm, running and climbing on tractor tires. It is a pastoral life, one much different than his previous one, Peslaski said. I feel fortunate that we lived a good life and worked hard for what we got to get to this place, he said, sitting at his dining room table in his log cabin, piping hot coffee in a mug. I'm inspired by every Friday when I see people driving to Weldon Springs State Park and Arrowhead Campgrounds with their campers just to spend a weekend to what I have year-round. Getting up in the morning and seeing the goats and seeing the pigs, getting to play with Squiggy, delivering baby goats in the spring, raising the chickens in the morning, getting up and seeing them. And they greet you. You say, hey, kids, and they say, hey, back to you, the goats do. We have four different species of owls out here. And just to sit and listen to them and just take a step back and look at the simple things in life. That's my driver, is appreciating the simple things in life. Appreciating what people take for granted, man. That is what keeps me going, I guess. And if you are a farmer or a producer and would like to talk with me for this column, call me at 309-820-3275 or email daniel.alkire@lee.net and be sure to check back next time to find out what we're chopping up on the cutting board. And our next front page story is about Illinois, headlined Rally Blasts Shoat Job and Service Cuts. This is from the Saluki Local Reporting Lab, datelined Anna. Union leaders, lawmakers, and political candidates gathered alongside dozens of employees from the Shoat Mental Health and Developmental Center Tuesday to rally against the state's plan to make dramatic cuts to staff and services at the downstate mental health facility. One after another, they took the microphone on the back of a bright green pickup truck as signs and chants of Save Shoat echoed through the streets of downtown Anna. The Illinois Department of Human Services announced the changes in a July 23rd letter to staff. The three-year plan includes eliminating the state-run facility's entire general residential program for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, reducing the number of civil mental health beds, and laying off about 250 employees by March 2027. Shame on IDHS, owner Tina Rivera Winfield, President of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Local 141, told the crowd, "They sent us the memo, but where are they now?" AFSCME, the union that represents the majority of Choate staff, organized Tuesday's rally to condemn the decision by IDHS, asking that it be reversed. Choate currently serves 58 people across its general and forensic developmental disabilities programs and 75 mental health patients. The state-run mental health hospital employs roughly 524 people across its Anna campus and is one of the region's largest employers. Winfield said this is just the beginning of many rallies, vowing that AFSCME will continue to host them until the decision is reversed. Accompanying Winfield was Jason Woolard, president of the Southern Illinois Central Labor Council, who warned that the ramifications of this decision would reach far beyond the facility. "We cannot allow for this to happen at this facility," Woolard said. "The residential impacts are going to be dramatic." Many who gathered worried about what would become of their jobs. Coda Leslie, a mental health technician who has worked at Choate for about a year and a half, said he expects to be among those laid off because of his lack of seniority. "I felt distraught," Leslie said, of hearing the news. "I'm not sure what I'm going to do. People like me that don't have a lot of seniority, we're pretty much not going to have a job. I expect to get laid off for sure." Leslie said he hopes the weekly demonstrations continue to garner attention until the state changes course. "Man, I just hope to see everybody coming out and supporting us next Tuesday and every Tuesday after that," Leslie said. "I'm hoping to see things change and that all of us get to keep our jobs." Sylvester King Mo Morse, a participant at Tuesday's rally, is not a Choate employee, but lives in Anna and has multiple personal ties to the facility. "My sister worked there and my aunt worked there for 19 years," Morse said, but that's not his only connection to Choate. "When I was a kid, they said I was a problem, so they sent me there to a school that used to help problem kids," Morse said. "It helped me a lot. It made me become better and helped me get along with people. I believe that they're just way more than Choate mental health." Eddie Comiant, AFSCME Council 31 Southern Illinois Regional Director, told demonstrators to make their opposition impossible for state leaders to miss. "If the governor flies over in his helicopter, we want him to see us fighting him," he said. "When we fight, we win." Governor J.B. Pritzker recently defended the IDHS decision during a July 28th news conference and bill signing, saying the staffing cuts follow the relocation of residents from Choate's General Developmental Disabilities Program. The downsizing of Choate's developmental disabilities population followed reporting by Capital News Illinois and ProPublica outlining the severe mistreatment of patients by staff and a culture of cover-up that had persisted for years, despite state and federal regulators repeatedly citing problems and calling for improvements. "Remember, the reason there are staff reductions is because we have literally moved the developmentally disabled residents there to better facilities," Pritzker said. "At some point, you don't need staff when there is nobody at that facility." However, Choate employees and local officials argued Tuesday that the state should expand, not reduce, mental health services in southern Illinois, where they said jails, courts, and treatment providers are already struggling to find beds for people in crisis. IDHS plans to phase down all 75 civil mental health beds at Choate while adding beds at Madden Mental Health Center in Chicago. The agency said the shift, which is scheduled to be completed by March 2027, reflects that the need for mental health beds is greater in northern Illinois. Jackson County Assistant State's Attorney Travis Fleming, who handles mental health cases, told Capital News Illinois that people are already waiting in the county jail for placement in the state's forensic mental health system. "We do have individuals waiting for transport for fitness sitting in our jail currently," Fleming said. Fitness restoration is a process for defendants who, because of mental illness, do not understand the legal proceedings against them or cannot work with their attorneys. Treatment is intended to help them understand the judicial process so they can participate in their own defense. Homer Chip Markle, the Democratic candidate for Illinois House District 118, aimed his remarks directly toward Pritzker. "Governor, you should stand up and reverse the decision of IDHS," Markle said. State Senator Paul Jacobs, a Republican from Pomona who represents Illinois' 59th district, said that the demand for mental health treatment is not limited to Chicago or Northern Illinois. "We are in mental health crisis across the state," Jacobs said. "We need SHOAT." Union County State's Attorney Tyler Tripp said that his office repeatedly encounters the lack of available treatment space. "Illinois is in a mental health crisis, and what I always hear in my office is that we have no more room here," Tripp said. He said that hundreds of forensic patients across Illinois are waiting in jails for appropriate treatment in a state mental health facility. "There are hundreds of people sitting in jail with their mental health declining," Tripp said. "State operations like SHOAT should not just remain open, they should be expanded. Any loss of a member of staff or any patient is unacceptable," he added. Tripp rejected the IDHS explanation that demand is greater in the northern part of the state. "The need for mental health beds is greater than we can currently handle across the entire state, not just northern Illinois," he said. Republican State Representative Scott Duty, an Anna resident who represents Illinois' 118th district, has repeatedly condemned the reductions at SHOAT and did so again while addressing the crowd. "I'm here today to support you all," Duty said. "Employees and patients are not just numbers published on a spreadsheet." IDHS said in its original letter that the changes at SHOAT are a result of the success of the state's 3-year plan, which aimed to repurpose the facility in partnership with the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine. As part of that partnership, SIU evaluated how SHOAT's campus, workforce, and programs could be repurposed. Its initial recommendations included preserving and retraining existing employees, retaining and potentially expanding civil mental health services, adding forensic psychiatric care, and converting unused space for step-down treatment, crisis services, housing, and other community programs. The first phase of SIU's SHOAT Transformation Report, published July 14, 2023, said that two additional phases were planned. Phase 2, which was due December 31, 2023, was expected to make recommendations concerning the safety of both people receiving care and SHOAT employees. Phase 3 was expected to make recommendations concerning Illinois' statewide system of care for people with developmental disabilities and serious mental illness over the following 2 to 3 years. And neither Phase 2 nor Phase 3 appears to have been made public. SIU School of Medicine's 2020 to 2025 Strategic Plan Progress Report, published July 3, 2025, said the university supported the SHOAT project and worked with IDHS's Division of Developmental Disabilities to advance workforce and care improvements. An October 2024 IDHS announcement said the decision to add as many as 25 mental health beds at SHOAT was informed by recommendations from SIU. The agency said SIU continued to shape the transformation through campus repurposing recommendations, staff training initiatives, and assessment of safety, patient care, and workforce needs, but it did not attach the underlying reports, assessments, or recommendations. IDHS's 2026 to 2030 Strategic Planning Roadmap, released in May, also describes the SHOAT initiative as a 3-year partnership with SIU. It lists 4 objectives: reducing the developmental disabilities population by 123, increasing mental health bed capacity, implementing safety enhancements, and expanding support for community living. Jacobs defended SIU's role in the process and said the school's work did not call for the cuts that IDHS announced. "SIU is not at fault for this," Jacobs said. "In fact, their reports are very thorough and clear." Winfield told the dozens of people lining the streets of downtown Anna that workers agreed to participate in SIU's evaluation because they believed it could strengthen SHOT. "There is power in numbers," Winfield said. "3 years ago, they had us at the bargaining table telling us that they were going to repurpose SHOT. We agreed to let SIU come in and evaluate the facility, and they actually made some great recommendations. They said that we should be expanding mental health services. They said that there is a need for us, and I'm here to tell you all that there absolutely is." The IDHS decision to reduce operations at SHOT comes after decades of documented issues at the Southern Illinois facility, including resident abuse, neglect, criminal investigations, and repeated failures by employees and administrators to report or stop misconduct. A 2022 investigation by Capital News Illinois and ProPublica found that residents had been beaten, sexually assaulted, neglected, humiliated, and dangerously neglected at SHOT for roughly a decade. At least 26 employees have been arrested on felony charges connected to their work at the facility while they were entrenched in a code of silence in which workers withheld information, coordinated their accounts, or protected colleagues accused of abuse. In March 2023, Pritzker announced a 3-year transformation plan that would move about 123 residents, roughly half of SHOT's population at the time, into community placements, family homes, or other state-operated facilities. The state also promised stronger oversight, additional training, cameras in common areas, and a partnership with the SIU School of Medicine to help determine how SHOT's remaining programs should operate. Officials said at the time that the plan was not a closure and did not include layoffs. SHOT's general developmental disabilities population has since fallen from 199 residents at the beginning of the transformation to 16. IDHS now characterizes the elimination of those units and the phase-out of SHOT's civil mental health beds as the completion of that plan, though the layoffs mark a departure from the state's original assurance that the restructuring would not cost employees their jobs. AFSCME said the administration assured the union during the recent legislative session that its proposed fiscal year 2027 budget would not include layoffs. AFSCME responded to the announcement in a news release with comments from Council 31 Executive Director Roberta Lynch, who said that IDHS should have consulted with the union to develop a more rational plan that would be more fair to SHOT's employees and the individuals in their care. "Had we been aware of the planned layoffs, we certainly would have opposed the budget as introduced," Lynch said. The AFSCME collective bargaining agreement with the state of Illinois includes well-defined rights for employees slated for layoff, and AFSCME intends to ensure that all such requirements are fully met if the department continues down this irresponsible path. And our last front page story is about Washington, D.C. Senate panel slams Fauci, contempt of Congress measure a party fight. This is a Reuters story, Dateline Washington. A Senate committee voted Thursday to hold Dr. Anthony Fauci in contempt of Congress after the former top U.S. infectious disease official refused to answer questions about his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. The Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee approved a referral pushed by its Republican chair, Rand Paul of Kentucky, a longtime Fauci antagonist, on a party-line vote of 8-7. The vote followed a hearing last week where Fauci, who is 85 and retired in 2022, invoked the Fifth Amendment, the right to remain silent, more than 100 times. The vote is the sharpest escalation yet in a broad Republican and Trump administration campaign to relitigate the pandemic and hold accountable the officials who ran the U.S. response. Paul has pursued a years-long investigation to try to prove his and other Republicans' conviction that Fauci orchestrated a cover-up of the coronavirus's origins. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has upended federal health policy around distrust of pandemic-era science, casting his overhaul of the health agencies as a reckoning with what the administration calls the coercive mandates of the COVID-19 response, both men blamed Fauci and wrote books criticizing him. Democrats introduced 5 motions to postpone the vote, all of which failed along party lines. One, offered by the committee's top Democrat, Senator Gary Peters of Michigan, sought to have Paul commit not to bypass a full Senate vote by referring the matter directly to the Justice Department. Fauci, who led the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases for 38 years, became the face of the U.S. pandemic response and a primary target of anger over measures taken against a virus that killed more than 1.1 million Americans. President Donald Trump and many conservatives criticized him over lockdowns, mask and social distancing guidance, and his promotion of vaccines, which became heavily politicized despite being shown to be safe and effective. Fauci and public health officials worldwide backed the measures based on scientific evidence available at the time. David Shertler, an attorney for Fauci, called the vote a crude political stunt intended to punish Dr. Fauci for exercising his constitutional rights and urged the Senate to reject what he called a meritless and politically motivated contempt resolution. For years, Senator Paul has proclaimed to anyone who would listen that Dr. Fauci should be prosecuted and put in prison. Dr. Fauci has committed no crime, and Senator Paul knows it, Shertler said, describing the resolution as a continuation of a personal vendetta. A contempt referral typically must be approved by a congressional committee and then the full Senate, which would likely need a 60-vote majority, requiring Democratic support, highly unlikely given the party's defense of Fauci. But Paul claimed that the vote might be unnecessary, telling Fox News that he could send the referral directly to the Justice Department with a legal brief. Paul's office did not respond to a request for comment. Peters called the probe a one-sided rushed investigation and said punishing a witness would undermine the committee's credibility. And Democrats also complained they were denied adequate access to relevant documents, a charge that Paul rejected. If the referral proceeds, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, run by Trump ally Jeanine Pirro, would review it and decide whether to seek a grand jury indictment. Fauci also faces state-level scrutiny, with West Virginia joining Louisiana, Florida, and Alabama in investigating his pandemic conduct. A federal pardon does not preclude state charges. Former President Joe Biden preemptively pardoned Fauci in January 2025 to guard against unjustified and politically motivated prosecutions related to his COVID or his role in the response. The pardon does not cover subsequent conduct. Paul claimed Fauci had no valid Fifth Amendment claim because the pardon nullified it and because Fauci waived any remaining protection by testifying. Fauci told the panel last week that Paul summoned him only to force testimony backing the senator's repeated public pledges to see him imprisoned. And the Wall Street Journal reported late Wednesday that the committee obtained a backup copy of Fauci's iPhone from his tenure as NIAID director, including his period fronting the first Trump administration's pandemic response in 2020. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, August 7th, 2026. I look forward to reading part two with you next.